Well, first, what can we do? Well, Hands Off Venezuela is actively involved in solidarity actions with the Venezuelan revolution. It was launched in 2002, promoted by Alan Woods and other comrades, and then it spread. Its activities in Britain have reached the point where we've had trade union bodies either affiliating or passing resolutions supporting Hands Off Venezuela, with a total of 6 million members. We've taken HOV speakers to trade union conferences. We've held fringe meetings. We took a UNT representative to the TUC. We managed to get a resolution passed by the TUC supporting the Venezuelan revolution, which is amazing. How they interpret that support is another question, obviously. But we did it. We invite trade union speakers, youth speakers, on speaking tours of Europe and other countries. We raise money for the activities. We try and counter as much as we can the propaganda of the media. Obviously, it's a small voice compared to the financial backing they've got. But even little meetings like this on the campus, the aim is to make people more aware of what's happening in Venezuela and build up the support for it. And a lot can be done. We've sent delegations to Venezuela during the elections, for instance. Other delegations at other moments. There's a lot that we can do, and there's a lot of work to be done in countering the propaganda, because it's blatant lying which we have in the press in this country and internationally. On the political forces of the left, I don't have all the details. The Communist Party actually is split on this question. Part of them joined the United Socialist Party. A lot of their leaders, 17 members of the Central Committee, apparently were expelled for joining. So they've split. Some of them have joined, and some of them, those who stayed out, are obviously the official party. There's other groups in a similar situation. Some groups are staying out, refusing to be part of it. I think it's a sectarian approach. When 5.6 million people in Venezuela decide to support such a party, not just to support it, to ask to join it, I think that we can call it a mass party. I'm not saying they're all active, obviously, but it's a very, very big movement. And the mood in the ranks of the workers is actually in favour of this party, because the mood that exists amongst ordinary working people on the left is they're tired of all these different Bolivarian parties that claim to be all for the same thing, but they're all fighting with each other over little bureaucratic positions. When Chavez, and another thing is, Chavez promoted this party from the top. He got an immediate response from below. And at the meeting where he was launching it, on the platform, you had all the leaders of all the various Bolivarian parties. And one thing Chavez said was, this new party has got to be built from the bottom up. It's got to be elected from the bottom up. The representative has got to be in the hands of the rank and file. And he says, at the end of this process, I hope that we don't find that we have the same faces leading this new party that are now leading all the other parties. And all those people are actually sitting behind him. And the comrades said that they looked rather embarrassed when Chavez was making this speech. So there is a connection between Chavez and the rank and file, which people are not fully aware of. He's not the classical social democrat that's emerged through years of reformism in the labor movement. He's actually a military man, so he has slightly different characteristics to that, and responds in a different manner. Some groups, there's actually one group in Venezuela that is so out of it that they're with the oligarchy, they're with the opposition, because they see the undemocratic tendencies of Chavez. And one of them they call Red Flag, but they actually support the opposition. You have weird and wonderful groups on this planet. But and there are other groups that refuse to join. I think they will be buried in a mass movement which they will not understand. And I think that any genuine socialist would join the party and would fight for genuine socialist ideas amongst these people. When you have a stadium with 17,000 promoters, very keenly, and I mean, I'm not just from Hands Off Venezuela, I'm on the editorial board of In Defense of Marxism, and I'm a member of the International Marxist Tendency, and we have a group of comrades in Venezuela called the Revolutionary Marxist Current, and when they went to the stadium, they sold out of Marxist literature amongst all the promoters of the party. So it's false to think that it's just a maneuver from the top. It is giving expression to millions of workers, and it actually answers the point. One man alone cannot carry out a revolution. Chavez can't change Venezuela on his own. You need a mass party of the working class based on a Marxist program and a socialist program. The USP can be the channel for that to happen. There will be inevitably struggles within this party with different tendencies. You know, with such a size, you can't expect 5.6 million people all to be in one position. It will be a forum for debate and discussion and for struggle for socialist ideas, and there'll be the reformists there as well. And our duty is to be there fighting these ideas, which are really, in a certain sense, reaction in Venezuela has proved incapable of crushing this revolution. It's still incapable of doing it, it's manoeuvring to. It's actually trying to work from within. It's trying to pull back the revolution from within by trying to push forward a reformist agenda that we mustn't go over certain limits and nationalisation shouldn't be there, etc. The question of impatience of the people, that's something I raised. I'm surprised what the comrade said, because it's funny sometimes how you say something and somebody understands completely different to what you're saying. It's a dangerous thing to have people being impatient, not because we don't sympathise with those people, but because that impatience is due to the situation that exists, and it can be used by the oligarchy and the opposition to try and create a mood of lack of confidence in the revolution, tiredness, and a pulling away. And we completely sympathise with those workers who are saying those things. The point is, the danger is that if that mood exists and then it's not followed by action which says, not enough milk, right, we're going to expropriate the landlords who are not sending the milk to the dairies. And the comrades in Venezuela have had meetings with Chavez present where he's actually threatened to do that when he's being told the reason why we haven't got, for instance, one of the, referring to the factories, that factories under work control, there are factories under workers control that were nationalised, Inverpal and others. In one of the meetings there, the question was posed, one of these factories is having problems. And I'll give you an example of the kind of problem this factory is posed. This factory can produce valves, those great big valves, for the oil pipelines. The bureaucracy within PDVSA, the state oil company, instead of ordering valves from a company that's been taken over by the workers and nationalised and is being run under workers' control, is ordering the valves from United States companies. Why? They want that experiment, let's call it that experiment of workers' control, that little example there, to fail. So then they can say to Chavez and the leaders, look, workers' control doesn't work. The only way you can have it is by command from the top. And it was referred to Chavez that, look, they could order the valves from us. It's a Venezuelan company. Instead, they are ordering from America, using Venezuelan money to make profit for US companies. Chavez asked the minister who was manoeuvring on this question, is this true? Is this what's going on? And it was extremely annoyed at what's going on. Chavez at one point said he felt he was like a man with a whip, had to go around constantly pulling people into line, because it's a fact. One man on his own cannot carry out a revolution. And what exists is you have the presidential palace dominated by bureaucrats from the old regime. There's about 1,300 people who work there. At least 1,000 are from the previous regime. They were nominated by previous governments. They are like the civil servants in this country whose only aim is... You remember that old comedy programme, Yes, Minister? You see the way they behave there. It's, yes, you've got some nice ideas, but we're the ones who really control the bureaucracy. And that exists in Venezuela too. And the only way that's going to be broken is by actually a movement of the workers. You can't simply count on one man or a few individuals at the top. The Bolivarian movement has within it a bureaucracy which is trying to hold the movement back. That's clear. And that is the most dangerous thing at this moment in Venezuela. On the question of Chavez and the permanent revolution, he has read it. I think what he's drawn from it is the revolution has to be international. He hasn't quite understood a lot of the other stuff that's in there. But it's not a bad thing to have picked up, that it has to be international. Obviously, that's true, but we have to go a bit beyond that. I'm jumping around. One of the articles in the constitutional reform actually provides for the central bank to be taken over by the government, put under control of the government, which it isn't at the moment. There's some comparisons with Chile, and there's a lot of comparisons can be made with Chile. But one thing I think I would say is that, yes, more nationalisations were carried out in Chile. That's true. The end result, of course, we know how it went, because he didn't take over the whole of the economy. And economic sabotage was carried out under Pinochet, under Allende, and it was used to move people against the government, to divide the movement, to weaken it, and prepare the ground for a coup. That's quite clearly what they're trying to do now. But in Venezuela, although that there's not been so much nationalization, from the point of view of the mass movement and the balance of forces, are much more weighed in favor of the working class and the revolutionary movement. And it's not just in Venezuela, it's an international phenomenon. It's the same in Bolivia, it's the same in Ecuador and other countries in the continent. Now, we also support a front in Venezuela. It's called the Front of the Revolutionary Front of Occupied and Recuperated Factories that have been taken over. And this coordinates those factories that have either already been nationalised or have been occupied. For instance, the Sanitarios Maracay example, which is in the video, which is worth watching, which is an example of a factory which has been occupied. But there's been bureaucratic manoeuvres there, and they've managed to cut across that. But there is a movement of occupied factories and workers moving in that direction, and the front calls for nationalisation under workers' control. That is the only answer to the problems of the Venezuelan workers, and that's what we have to push also internationally. Trying to remember. Yes, one of the reforms is to allow Chavez to stand again as president, because the old constitution said two terms. It's actually, I think, a misconception that a member of parliament should not be elected for more than two parliaments. In Italy there's a bit of debate on this, and some of the people on the left are falling for it, as if by removing an MP after two times in parliament you're going to get a better one coming on top. It doesn't solve the problem of the bureaucracy in the parties that have elected them and who decides who these people are. And it works also against the left. If you get a genuine workers' representative elected, imagine Dave Nellis in the old days. He was elected to Parliament twice. Imagine if that Lord existed, he wouldn't have been able to stand. But it's been used. Oh, this is an anti-democratic measure. He wants to stand. Basically, he wants to stand forever. And he wants to set up a dictatorship. All he's saying is, I want a chance to stand at the next election. Tony Blair had that chance, and Thatcher did it, and nobody complained. As long as the people have the right to vote. We complain about the policy. I'm saying nobody complained in terms of, oh, this is undemocratic, she's standing for the third time. That wasn't the problem. A lot of these things I've said. I think the only guarantee in the long run is for the workers of Venezuela to take power. If they do not take power, then in the long run these shortages, which now are becoming quite severe in some sectors, and there are queues now in some parts of Venezuela, will be used to destabilize the situation, and there will be moves against Chavez. But we have to remember that it's still enormously weighted in favor of the masses. And the masses see Chavez. There is this. They see Chavez as the leader, and they see the bureaucrats around him. That's the way the masses view the situation. They can see. They see a difference between the two, and they look to Chavez. Look, do something against these people. The appeals that are to Chavez. He's still enormously popular because of his past and what he's been doing so far. On his own, however, he won't be able to stop this. The reaction. He has to lean on the masses and base himself on the masses, and he's actually taken the correct step in promoting a party. People seem to forget that it doesn't fit quite the situation that we've seen in the past. This party has been promoted by Chavez. He's saying it has to be built from below. Any genuine revolutionary would say, right, okay, I'm going to build a branch in my area of this party, and I'm going to insist that it's democratic. And a sectarian will say, No. This is a manoeuvre from the bourgeois democrat or nationalist or whatever they've called him. We have nothing to do with it. That will leave millions of workers in that party, and these little groups on the fringes of the movement will have absolutely no influence in this process. The mistake of the UNT leaders, I have to emphasize this one. When Chavez announced that over 1,000 factories were being considered for nationalization, one minister actually said to workers, "You occupy the factories, we will pass the decree to nationalize them." What did the leaders of the UNT do? "We can't collaborate with this guy. He's bourgeois, nationalist, populist, blah, 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 blah." And refused to do it. If they had launched as a union, the UNT, which was created as an alternative to the old bureaucratic union, the old CTV, which actually supported the coup, if they'd taken that initiative on the ground, they would have created enormous pressure for a movement towards nationalisation. But no, we can't dirty our hands, because, and it's a completely sectarian approach on this. It's actually tragedy that these people behave like this. And it shows you where you can end up. What's his name? Chirinos, one of the leaders of the UNT, is now appearing on platforms with leaders of the CTV, that is the bureaucratic old union. He's been interviewed by opposition newspapers, and on the basis of what? Trade union autonomy, claiming that we can't join the UNT because that would eliminate trade union autonomy. But that's a false argument, because Chavez isn't asking for the PSUV to have control of the unions. He's asking the unions to be part of the party and part of the process in a certain way, in the same way the British trade unions, if and when they move to the left, can influence the Labour Party because they're part of it. But a question was asked on Iran. Chavez is, I think, sometimes doesn't quite understand who he's talking to. He took a book by Trotsky and gave it to one of the Ayatollahs and said he should read it, thinking that this guy would be interested in such a thing. I doubt if they were. There's an idea within the Bolivarian movement and the government that we need to find allies against imperialism. And because Iran is in conflict with US imperialism, then we can link up with them. It's one thing to have investments and trade deals. It's another thing to actually go and define, what's his name, Ahmadinejad as a brother and embrace him and all the rest of it. It caused some problems. The Kodjo car workers in Iran actually wrote and said, "Well, you know, this guy is not really the friend of the Iranian workers. And what are you doing making deals with this guy?" And we did publish some letters from Iranians highlighting this fact. On the concrete things that we can do here is build the Hands Off Venezuela campaign. Promote it wherever possible, in the trade unions, on the university campuses, in any field that we can. The Hands Off Venezuela conference, national conference, is taking place on the 24th of November. A Unison branch in Cardiff has agreed to help in organising a bus down to London for the day. As you see, we have support in the trade union movement for the campaign, and it shows that in Britain, a lot of leftward moving workers look with sympathy to Venezuela, because what I've seen travelling around in different countries is that whereas you have a lot of groups spending their time trying to measure the degree of revolutionariness of Chavez and with a thermometer, seeing how far he's gone and can we really define him as a socialist or whatever, ordinary working people and trade unionists around the world on the left naturally sympathise with the Venezuelan revolution, because they see it. It's in conflict with US imperialism. Reforms in favour of the workers are being carried out, and that attracts the attention. That explains why you can raise the issue in the trade unions. Why, for instance, the Metal Workers Union in Italy at the National Conference voted a resolution supporting the Hands Off Venezuela campaign. Whole Canadian federations of unions have supported the campaign, etc. There's a natural instinct of leftward moving youth and workers around the world to support the Venezuelan revolution. We can build on that to build the support and build up the campaign. There'll be workshops, discussions at the national conference, and speakers from Venezuela at that conference, and we can use it to build up the campaign more and promote it further inside the trade unions. I can tell you something. There are people even here. There's a parallel to the left-right conflict within the Bolivarian movement, even in the Solidarity movement, as I said earlier on. Livingston was part of it. There was the meeting of Hans La Venezuela in Vienna with 5,000 people. It was organised by Hans La Venezuela in Vienna. It was the biggest meeting of that kind for many years in Austria. There could have been the same kind of meeting in London. The promoters of that meeting, which you saw in the video, received 5,000 emails of people asking to attend. They deliberately organised it in a hall that could only hold 800. Originally, they said no Hans La Venezuela people could attend. They tried to stop us getting in. Eventually, they had to compromise and give us 100 tickets. They couldn't stop us having a banner and a stall and everything. And then it was a slap in the face because Chavez actually stood up in front of all these people that were doing this, thanked Hands Off Venezuela campaign, as you can see, and Alan Woods in particular. And that's why that explains the look on Ken Livingstone's face. They are, on an international level, the same as the right wing of the Bolivarian movement. They are trying to hold it back. Their interest is to stop the revolution going over a certain line. It's our interest to promote the opposite, obviously. We've actually said, well, look, let's unite all the solidarity movements. Why should we have all these divided solidarity movements? If the bottom line of the campaign is solidarity with the revolution, within which all different tendencies can express their views, why not work together? But no, they will not, because there's a different agenda there. It is quite clear, and it's not just on Venezuela. This has happened in many solidarity campaigns there. Left and right, and it reflects the left-right division in the Venezuelan revolution itself, and there is a struggle there which will be determined by the real forces in Venezuela. But at the end of the day, we have to build a Marxist tendency in the Venezuelan labor movement and internationally, because you can see Venezuela has many lessons, and I think one of the lessons is even a movement which starts off not as a movement openly for socialism, but as a movement for reform. Reforms that once upon a time, even in this country, were conceded by the capitalists. The capitalists are not prepared to tolerate even that. They organised a coup, not against a socialist revolution or a Bolshevik party or whatever you want to call it. They organised a coup against a government which was trying to spend a bit of public money on reforms. That, as Marx said, sometimes you need the whip of the counter-revolution to push the revolution forward. The reaction of the oligarchy has actually pushed the movement further to the left. And each time there's been a conflict of that, it's pushed it further and further to the left. We have to understand that this oligarchy is not going to give up. It will only give up in two ways. Either by taking power back, and then all the manoeuvrings can cease, or they will be overthrown, and their levers of power will be taken out of their hands. At the moment, it's a halfway house. What we say is, we support the revolution, but we need to go a bit further than this. We need to actually complete it, expropriate the capitalists, and use those resources in the interests of Venezuelan people, and spread it to the rest of Latin America. And the potential is there, because the similar situation exists in Ecuador, exists in Bolivia, and elsewhere. It's a very important situation, the Venezuelan situation, because the whole of the Latin American situation hinges on it, and it comes back to us. Can you imagine what the situation would be like tomorrow if Venezuela is crushed in a counter-revolution, what the propaganda would be, and what message they would send out to workers in this country? Struggle doesn't pay, you can't change society, you just got to accept your lot. And just to finish on what one comment asked, potential in this country, well, I think the potential exists everywhere for the struggle for socialism. The tube strike, the postal workers strike, even the prison officers have been out on strike in this country. The mood in this country is changing. It's quite clear there's an underlying mood of radicalization taking place. And it's inevitably going to erupt. And Venezuela, I believe, shows us the potential for what can take place, not just there, not just in Latin America, but in the whole of Europe. France is now preparing for such a conflict. I don't know if you've seen what's happening. There's a major confrontation being prepared. Sarkozy is looking, he's basically looking to have a kind of miners' strike situation in France. He wants to take on the main battalions. His idea is he wants to defeat them, obviously. But you've got a radical mood in many other countries in Europe. we can be confident in the future as long as the right actions are taken, i.e. the power of the capitalists is challenged and their property is taken away from them. Unless we do that, then we may be discussing in 10 years' time Venezuela like we discussed Chile, and hopefully that won't happen. It's up to us to struggle as much as we can in our countries to make sure that doesn't happen. I'll leave that.